So the second closing speech is chapters 29 to 31. And that's EO's last speech for real. It's not the last set of remarks. He's still going to have things to say in response to God, believe it or not. But if you take a look at your sheet, if you flip to the second side, I gave you an outline of this chapter. So remember where we've been. The visitors are done speaking. Job has finished responding to them. Job has adopted the statement that wicked people suffer, whether because he wants to show the contradiction of his experience through his own words. He's going to say contradictory things, or whether he really believes that wicked people suffer. He declares that wisdom is found only in reverence for God and in righteous conduct. And now we get to his last speech. It's an opportunity for him to effectively sum up his positions. So in chapter 29, he is going to say, as you see on your sheet, I long for the good old days. I was a wonderful human being. I helped needy people. I destroyed evil. And I had everything in return. Wealth, security, honor. Life was wonderful. Then in chapter 30, he describes the world he has come into now. Now I am mocked, and not just mocked, but mocked by the lowly. I suffer horribly. God doesn't help me, even though I helped others. There's no measure for measure. God isn't interested in helping me. That's chapter 30. Chapter 31, he says, you know, if I had done something wrong, I would deserve it. But I haven't done anything wrong. And as you can see, if you look at my outline, 34 verses about I've done nothing wrong. Yes, that's what's getting the real estate here. And then finally, I wish someone would argue on my behalf, which I read as an appeal echoing what he has done earlier in the book, when he said to his visitors, you know what I really could use from you guys is sympathy. Right? I didn't need you to come here and tell me what I'm doing wrong. Especially when we know that they're entirely wrong, because they're in the wrong world. But that's the basic summary of the speech. It's a very interesting speech coming after everything we've seen until now, because it has nice imagery, nice poetry, a good rhythm to it. He seems much calmer than he had been before. He's still bitter, but he's much calmer. There isn't the same sort of frenzy here that we've seen before in his speech. A major theme in this speech, which he's touched on earlier in the book, is the theme of honor. Honor is very important for him here. It is a commodity exchanged for good behavior. If you do good things, then people are going to honor you. That's the message. If you take a look at source number 8, you see the way Newsom phrases it, which I particularly liked. She's not the only one to comment on it. But she writes, Job's representation of God as the normative social order writ large is the most important of his monologic claims. Right? Meaning, this is his monologue. That's what we're reading right now, is his monologue. She doesn't believe, again, that the previous three chapters were Job speaking. That was the previous two chapters were the narrator of the book. So she's saying his monologue begins here. And he's representing God as the normative social order writ large, meaning when things are good for Job communally, that's because God is helping him. When things are bad for Job communally, it's because God is hurting him. There's no divide between God and the community. You follow? If things are good for me in the community, if people are respecting me, it's because God is helping me. If people are hurting me, it's because God is hurting me. So God is the social order writ large, because he's God. But that's the idea. Job's depiction can find warrant in much of Israelite theological tradition that insists, which is a good phrase, that insists on the fundamental continuity between the moral nature of God and the moral values of its own community. And they give you she gives you a couple of examples here. But I brought you what came to mind for me first when I read that, and that is source number 9, Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Hu haya omer, this is Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. If the popular spirit is pleased with somebody, if generally people think well of a person, that means that God is pleased with that person. And if people don't like somebody, people are not pleased, then God is not pleased with them either. Now, there's a lot to be said about this Mishnah. We could spend a couple of hours on this Mishnah. Is this saying cause and effect?
Or worse, Hashem doesn't have an opinion.
Right. This is a very hard... Jules asked, does God not have an opinion? In other words, God is looking to see the way the wind is blowing. He's polling the community, right? And if the voters vote for you, then God likes you. What a horrific world that would be. It's a hard Mishnah to read. But I think the simple read is, in fact, what Nusim is saying here, which is, if you want to know if God is happy with you or not, your compass is society's response to you. If people think you're doing something wrong, there's something that you should be looking at. Now, go ask Noah how that worked out for him. Yes, it's not just Noah. What about Yirmiyahu, right? Does this really mean you're never supposed to buck the community? I have a hard time with that idea. Jules and then Shana.
Couldn't it be that at this point Eof feels in a way taken hostage by people, by the community, and he displays cognitive dissonance, denial, he goes along with his captors?
Well, let's see how what he actually does, because we haven't seen him yet. Right now we've just seen the introduction. Yeah, no, in a sense, and therefore, if they're against me, they must be right, is what you're suggesting. But he doesn't really go that route. He only does it in the positive. He says in chapter 29, they liked me, I must have been a good guy. He doesn't go the other half and say, they hate me now, therefore I must be a bad guy. In order for your assertion to be accurate, you'd have to have the flip side also. Shana.
Well, there are two things. One is the great Marxian joke. I wouldn't belong to any club that would have a person like me as a member. But the other is that, you know, we're called Ibrim because of the idea that we're contrarian. You know, whatever side everyone else is on, we're on the other side.
Yes.
So this is the reverse of that.
Correct. Correct. And that's only because, though, this is our team. In other words, we are on the other side, collectively. Correct. I don't have to be against my community. I just have to be against those who aren't in my community. That's what I would have suggested. Elisheva and then Rebecca.
I also at least just a concern about the community. If you work the community, you're concerned about the community, you're helping the community, then Hashem likes that. So, like, not that you're sort of selfish and, you know, self-serving, but so in other words, if you are helping out the community,
right. The problem is you're skipping a step, right? Because that read of the Mishnah, what Elisheva is suggesting is that the Mishnah is trying to say, if you help the community, God will like you. But the Mishnah didn't say that. It said if the community is pleased with you. So you're assuming that if I help the community will be pleased. And that, I mean, that's effectively part of what Job is saying. I was righteous, therefore people liked me, and so forth. But I wouldn't read that directly into the Mishnah, because the Mishnah just said, if people like you, then. It didn't say, if people like you because you did good things. It could be people like you for some other reason. Rebecca.
Maybe I missed something. I'm just trying to understand how we got from the last parak to where we are now.
Right. So the last parak was giving us the statement about wisdom and how wisdom is found and reverence and so forth. But it really was sort of 27 and 28 stood apart from Job's fight with them. There was no discussion. We mentioned when we started chapter 27, there's none of the back and forth. There's none of the yelling. There's none of the insults. There's none of the you said this, I say that type of a thing.
But Job isn't responding to anything that the narrator, what was sort of almost like parachuted in.
Correct.
There almost is not a response. I'm not incorrect in sensing there isn't a response to 27, 28.
Right.
We're just kind of continuing.
Right. However you read this, and I'm partial to the idea that that 27, 28 is the voice of the book rather than the voice of Eof. I see no reason why I should think that it's Eof speaking. But yes, the narrator isn't speaking to Job, he's speaking to the reader. And presenting an assessment of what we've just done with this dialogue. And now we're going to get Job summing up his position before in 32, where he had this weird fourth visitor, Elihu, who's going to, you know, turn everything on its head.
And does it make sense? I mean, and we should be keeping in mind the narrator's view of wisdom and of God as we approach three, or are they really separate?
I feel like they're sort of separate. I mean, there are pieces that will continue. Like, he's talking about his righteous behavior and so forth. So that will, you know, that's there. But it sort of feels like pieces of the same puzzle, but not so much that they're making the same picture. That's the way I would see it. It's hard to read it as one contiguous thought. The way I understand the goal of this speech, chapters 29 to 31, is on a few levels. On one level, it's a sort of closing argument. This is a summary of everything I've had to say in three chapters. It is also, I think, a setup for the new visitor, Elihu, who's going to start in chapter 32 and stop somewhere in chapter 78. Now, he has a lot of real estate. I think it's also, to a certain extent, an argument against the idea of a rational narrative, the idea that things work in a way that you can perceive and understand in the universe, because he's going to use the midah keneged midah idea, the measure for measure idea, and say, I did X and God didn't reciprocate. Even though all my visitors have told me that God reciprocates, it hasn't been so in my experience. And then last, and this does connect back to chapter 28, I had Yirat Hashem. I had reverence for God. I had wisdom, as recommended in chapter 28. And I was still abandoned by God. It didn't help me. So in that sense, it can be a comment on that statement. But again, I don't think Job is personally responding. I don't think he heard the speaker in 28, is the way I would put it. Clear? Okay. So let's start on chapter 29. Let's see what we can do with it. It reads a lot smoother and easier than the previous chapters, I have to tell you. Yes?
It's a good question.
Yes?
What time is it? One of the visitors say that there is not a reciprocal relationship between your good deeds and getting reward.
Right, so there were three basic approaches. It gets more complicated, but there were three basic approaches. There was Eliphaz, who said, straight, you did good, you're going to get rewarded. You did bad, you're going to get punished. There was Bildad, who said, that which looks bad now will ultimately turn out to have been for your benefit. Right? The classic was the uprooted tree planted somewhere else, and now it does much better. And then there was Sofar, and I'm not sure how to read Sofar. Because Sofar said, God's wisdom is really deep. And I wasn't sure if what he meant by that was, his wisdom is really deep, and therefore you may think you deserve to be rewarded, but you really don't. Remember that we had Ralbag's read of Sofar, who said, maybe it's because God knows what your potential was, and you didn't live up to your potential, and therefore you're going to be punished. So that's one way to read Sofar. The other way to read Sofar is that he's saying a variation of what Bildad said, which is, God's wisdom is really deep, and therefore the in-kind response from God is coming, but it's going to be very complicated and you're not going to realize it when it happens. The variation on Bildad. So either way, it's a promise that there is reward and punishment. The only question is, do you understand what deserves to be rewarded and punished? And do you understand what is reward and punishment when you see it? That's the catch. Okay. So the opening verses of chapter 29, sentences 1 to 10, are a statement of, I long for the good old days. Chapter 29, sentence 1, page 1657 in the Stone Tanakh. Vayosef Iyov se'et mishalo bayomar. And Job continued his mashal. Remember, we said that a mashal is generally an educational lesson expressed in a variety of forms, poetic, prophetic, and so on. But he's going to continue because no one else is speaking at that stage. Mi yitneini ki yarchei kedem ki mei eloka yishmereini. Oh, I wish, and mi yitain has been a constant theme for Job. It appears elsewhere in Tanakh also, but this idea of, oh, I wish, expressed as mi yitain or mi yitneini, is something that we've seen for him before. He says, oh, I wish I was like in the months, the early months, like the days when God would protect me. He's reducing. If I can't have it like the months, at least the days, right? Things were somewhat good, and I really liked them. Behilo neiro ale roshi, when he shined, when he shined his candle, his lamp, above my head. Laoro ele choshech, by its light I walked in the dark. I think the use of Bihilo is intentional. You could have used other words for illuminating. But remember that we've used the term Behala for confusion and Balahot for frightening entities of the night. And I think he's now contrasting that with Bihilo, which is shining light. God shined his light on me. That's my guess. I didn't see that from anyone responsible. But the other interesting thing here is, for those who were in the Medrash class that we did a couple of years ago, back when Torah was comprehensible, we did the Medrash in Parshas Noach, and one of the things that we picked up on was when the Torah says, Es ha'alokim hishalech Noach. Noach walked with God, as opposed to Avraham, where it says, Hithalech lefanai, walk in front of me. And the Medrash there in Bereishis Rabbah, or Lamed, said that Abraham and Noah were different. Abraham was like the person who shines a lamp in front of the king to illuminate the path, whereas Noah is walking with God. God brings Noah along, shining a light on Noah's behalf. Because Noah could not have survived what Abraham survived in his time, for him to reach out to his generation wouldn't have worked. So the point that I'm making with it is, the idea here, God is holding the candle over me to illuminate my path for me. It's this idea, Elisheva, and then Jules.
I just wonder, this is where the word Halo.
Halo?
Halo goes
no idea. That's your homework. Yes?
Does the phrase Metalich, isn't it also mentioned in the case of Hanukkah?
Yes, Vayitalech Hanoch et Elokim, yes. Which is one of the sources that leads us to read in all sorts of interesting things in Hanoch, is that match with Abraham and Noach.
So, saying when God would watch over me, implying that God isn't watching over him now.
Correct. That's what it used to be. That's what I once had. Kasher ha'yisi bimei chorpi, Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4. As I was in the days of chorpi. What word is chorpi?
Affliction.
It can't be cherpa to be shamed. That would be bad. So choref is winter. Well, what in the world does that do for me? So the answer may be, because choref meaning winter isn't necessarily an expression of the cold as much as it is the early grain. And indeed, Rashi notes the Aramaic uses the word chet resh pei for early. So in my early days, the days of my youth, Bisod Eloka Ale Oholi, when the secret of God was above my tent. Rashi says, wise people came to me to learn about God. He may be taking sod like Yisod, but Beod Shakai Imadi, Sivivo Saina Arai, when God was still with me, Sivivo Sai Naharai is either to be read as Sivivot Naharai, around my youths, or alternatively, my youths were around me. Kids or servants, different commentators say different things there. Birchotz halichai bechema. That's a tough one. When they washed or he washed the place where I walked with chema. What is chema?
Anger.
Anger. What in the world? Are you washing his footsteps with anger?
Butter.
So the commentators suggest that it's actually a dropped aleph. It's chema, which is butter. They bathed the place where I walked with butter, which isn't necessarily so safe, but they did. And the tzur reference for God, poured out with me streams of oil. Notice here three different terms for God in sentences 4, 5, 6. Eloka, Shakai, and Tzur. In all of his names, in all of his ways, God was with me. I had luxury with me. Everything was wonderful. That's the way things used to be. I'm looking at the clock and realizing that I'm stuck here. There's a Gemara Nida, which I'm going to throw in at the end, even though it really requires time, but I'm not going to have it. If you take a look at source number 10, you've heard, I expect, the idea that when people are in the womb, they learn Torah, right? They learn the entire Torah, and then they come out and they forget it. And no, the Gemara does not say that the septum comes from that. That's not what it says. It does mention the idea of the angel giving you a slap, like a shock, when you wake up, and then you forget everything you learned. And then the question is, well, then why did you learn it? And all sorts of nice divrei Torah. But that's not what I'm catching on right here. If you take a look at source number 10, you'll see the passage there. It's that idea that we learn everything in the womb is from our verses here. It comes from what we just read here. Because Job said, I'm not going to read the text, you can see it, I gave it to you right there. But the because it said, I wish I would have like the months of old, like the days. Job had a full life that was wonderful. He had kids already, right? So what do you mean when he said, like, the months and the days? What happened to the years? The Gemara picks up on it and says, what kind of good period lasts months but not years? Gestation. That's when he was in the womb. Things were wonderful. And so God shined with his light upon me there in the womb. Besod Eloka Aleo Hali. The secret of God was in my tent, meaning I was learning Torah. That's where the idea is anchored, is in these verses. There's much more to say on how it's tied into these verses and the role this plays in Judaism as a whole. This is something that we don't have time to go into, which is why I'm happy to be putting it at the end. But it's all plugged into the verses that we see here and this idea that God was with me. So Job says, I remember how wonderful things were. And we're going to continue next time to talk about more about how wonderful things were before things stopped being wonderful, which we'll also have to get to. So we'll pick up with that, God willing, next week.